Good morning and welcome back to the Explicit Measures Podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Hello, everyone, and good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's been a busy April. I said it last episode or a couple episodes ago. Man, it is just going fast. So
would
here
you
we
say
are.
More of the conferences? March was all conferences, right? So is this everything just the follow up then?
I think what happens when you spend time at conferences, everything else piles up. And so a lot of work stuff piles up. And so this has been a lot of work, travel for work things and other situations there. So in general, I would just say it's been busy. I'm good with the busy. It keeps things interesting.
It just means a little mix of recording and, you know, pre-recorded and live. But hey,
we're back.
Those joining us on YouTube this morning, we are live. So live. Join the conversation, as they say.
Chat will be open. If you want to say some comments or you have some thoughts around here, we'd love to hear from you in the chat window. Any major intros? I don't know if this is a major intro from my perspective, but I feel like since the Fabric conference has occurred and a lot of announcements were made there, it feels to me like there's a lot of blogs, posts, like things were announced and refinements on those announcements are now coming out now. And it's a lot to keep up with. I feel like there's a lot of posts coming out every couple of days. There's something new about another post, another feature, some more refinements on different things here. So I'm very excited about this. This feels really, to me, this feels very early days of Power BI when there was constantly getting quick updates or little updates here and there and improving your features.
I see our previous article literally talking just about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's never been more apparent than now. A few things with Copilot I'm seeing, but it's hard one. I think the biggest thing, it's hard one to one just to stay on top of it. But what's our favorite thing to do when something new comes out? Get our hands on it, try it out.
Say, talk about it.
Okay, we talk about it then. Yeah,
true.
Try it out. What about when there's 25 things you have to try out?
Oh, I know. That's my point. Like, I'm busy with work, and all these new things are coming out, and I want to try all of them. Like, I want to figure it all out. I've appreciated some very good blogs that have recently been published. I saw one on LinkedIn that I threw down at the community jam. Someone was doing some load, I guess it would be load testing a little bit, I guess. It's between like, hey, what happens if I run a pipeline versus run something in a Spark notebook, right? What does the cost look like to me in capacity units between the two solutions, right? Because you can do the same thing. This is what we've been talking about, was like, we need some people to come out and figure this stuff out. I've also been seeing people communicating and like, how do you make sure you understand how much this job cost me? Because CUs can kind of be backed their way into the cost to run that unit. So you can kind of do the math of how many CU seconds you are able to acquire, and you can divide out the math, and then, you know, how many CUs you're consuming on a particular feature. You can kind of dial that thing in. So anyways, very interesting there as well. I thought that was really fun and very interesting additionally.
But not to be lost in all the excitement of the new stuff. I'm telling you, you guys got to open up those on-premise gateway blogs, like the update release.
Yep.
There's a gold nugget in there.
Yep.
Now the latest on-premises data gateway now supports longer than 1 hour refreshes.
So
talking about big impacts to like, hey, today go download the latest. That's one you're going to get a lot of legs out of right out of the gate. And for longer running refreshes, if you're still using or leveraging the on-premises data gateway, that has always been a struggle bus point a little bit. And, That is now out in the latest gateway. So go check that out.
Awesome. I'll definitely read up on that one. That's a huge point out there, because I mean, anyone who has on-prem data, that's like the thing to figure out how to make that stuff work. So that's very important for people to know. On some hands, I agree, like that's great. But if your data refresh is taking that long, I'm also thinking to myself, like, is there anything I can do to tune that slightly?
The option is there. It's
true.
Good to have.
I agree. But I guess the question I have is, Will this potentially cause abuse in the system? I don't know. We'll see. So,
interesting, kind of on somewhat of the same subject. I've actually had a few conversations with people in the community and some people just getting into Power BI. And there's kind of a change happening where a lot of people are starting with solution fabric rather than what I think we normally do in Power Query or what we normally expect to do in like Power BI desktop. Like, oh, well, there's this approach to fabric called this medallion approach. And this is people coming from Excel who I'm talking about. I'm like, this is a change because you think the transition is always let's try this on Power BI because this is the natural transition. Was the conversation I had with some of their own, like, oh, you could do this in Power BI too? I was like, yeah, it's Power Query.
Yep. It's super cool having all the tools kind of bolted together. So I think that's very a good feature here. All right, enough of our intros. Our main topic today is going to be around...
Do you really? There's one more. There's a flip.
Sorry.
So they're changing the default behavior of Copilot and Power BI. So that was another blog.
I saw that one. I didn't quite understand it. Maybe I didn't read it thoroughly enough.
They're enabling by default as opposed to... Oh, yes. If you're enabling Copilot... That's an admin level, like, yep, I'm going to let my people do that. They're flip-flopping it. So I think what they're pointing out is there were a couple things that were probably holding this back from them on by default, and they've addressed those. So they are going to switch that on May 20th. So admins, you can disable it again, like if you're not going to do widespread or, you know, you don't have Copilot enabled, it's not really much of an effect, but... they are that switch is coming May 20th, so it's worth noting. And that's the only other thing I wanted to say.
Still, sorry, that's a really good call out because anything that's turning on by default, is something we should be aware of. I would say that feels like it's something we should be paying attention to. All right, any other announcements? I should ask for that first before I go on to the main topic. All right, I think we're good. All right. With that being said, let's jump in. And Seth, I kind of kick this one over to you. So today, the main topic is talking about anomaly detection. I literally caught you as you're taking a sip of coffee. Sorry about that. the main topic today is talking about data anomaly. What happens when something adjusts inside your data or the data model? You have to make some changes. You're redesigning the data that comes out to the reports. And how do you notify users within your organization that something's changing? What does that look like in order to roll something like that out? How do you notify them? Do you just let them figure it out? Like what are the options that we have here? And this is going to be pretty much a data culture, I think, kind of conversation. I think we're going to go into the topic for today. This comes from a mailbag, and Seth, if you wouldn't mind.
It does come from a mailbag, and a huge shout out to David.
We got a name.
Melbourne, Australia, because we got a name and a place. And I was really tempted to try to do an Australian accent from Dananda, but I'm not going to, because that would just be a train wreck for everybody. That would probably be like clipped. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I got to think about those kinds of things.
Yes.
So David asks, how best to document your dashboard for data changes, significant events, and other abnormalities? Example. Last July, we changed our segmentation model, but did not apply it retrospectively. Or COVID impacts can cause a spike in the data.
Or a dip.
If these things are not documented, the user can reach the wrong conclusions or have decreased confidence in, or perhaps worse, not have confidence in our output at all. As a secondary question, if you can identify an impact due to an abnormal event, should you try and normalize your data model, even if you can't do it with much accuracy?
Ooh. Okay, I'll just say for one, I've seen that before. And
how did that go over?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I will say this. COVID has impacted a lot of businesses in weird ways. Some have gotten extreme usage or spikes in consumption. Or whatever their product or whatever their service is, others have had you know, a larger dip than normal. So I've seen some organizations actually starting to carry more data. Typically, you would do like a 2 or 3 year carry of data. Some companies want to compare their pre-COVID data numbers to their after COVID numbers. And so they're carrying, as time clips on here, they're carrying more and more data to where were we before the COVID experience happens? And you know, are we far enough away now that we don't need to carry that data anymore? How is this going to look? So there's, I think there's a lot of considerations here.
Yeah, not that I want to revisit those COVID years, but there's a really good point here. I mean, if you were to go back then as the from an analyst role, I don't know if I've been ever busier than the few months right after the pandemic immediately hit from, honestly, a pure data point of view, from a data culture point of view. I was in-house and everyone wanted to see the numbers in a completely different way immediately. I always go back to, like, I'll call it a Sethism, but some things are not important until they're the most important thing in the world. And that's exactly what happens. Like, well, we need to see it. We need to shift everything this way and see it this way, because we're such an significant event caused everyone not just wanting to see the numbers, but see it in a different way. And I think that was very, very common with a lot of teams. We had to come up with a different model for everything that we had, the different metrics, the way that they wanted to see it. And it was so hyper-focused. That's kind of the problem with outliers, right? Or at least significant events. You don't know they're going to happen. And how do you make that change? Because if everything you've been reporting, we're doing sales by some. Well,
interesting.
All of a sudden you have the significant event or outlier that occurs, and it's kind of hard to just peer communicate that. And it's really hard to do that in the middle of one, just trying to, from a technical point of view, but then how do you let everyone know, oh, on this day, we've made this significant change because of whatever the abnormality is.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think where this question kind of throws me for a loop, and we can talk through the different aspects, is it threw me into, like, looking at the types of anomalies, right, that we have in data. And the one I think you're speaking to is the point, right? There's a point in time, there's some action, like there's a spike in data. And even in the business, you know, that I've experienced with, a lot of those anomalies are like something happened in a day, right? So it's very easy for me to identify or highlight a point and potentially help the end user visualize why that point spike may have happened, right? In this case, like if it's a day anomaly and we had a dip, or typically it'd be like a dip because like a major part of our normal ingestion process, you know, didn't fail
down
or failed.
Yeah.
And there is no recovering of that live data, right? It's gone. Like, you can't retrospectively like just fix the dip. So do you show the dip or you just normalize it, right? And in those cases, for the business, we can't normalize that. We can't just say, oh, that never happened. Because there's a lot of underlying detail data that goes in the report as well. And you're going to miss that. So if we're tracking that volume by day and we have that big dip, the thought that we still haven't like implemented completely, but in my mind would be, I could have a one-off table that the business owns, where we could have the key being the date and a description of what happened. Well, there was a major failure, something, something. And that could be a card that goes along in the line chart or something like that, where I'm just real time adding that anomalous data once in a while to a visual. Anyway, that was like the original thought.
Well, I think we're speaking kind of, let me know if you guys agree or not, really two different types of abnormalities or outliers. There are pure data ones, like, oh, something changed. When did that happen? This large spike that you don't notice till retrospective. Or there's the external one, something like COVID, where everyone is going to assume the day is going to change. But more importantly, that affects everyone on how they want to view, even if it is the same information. Right? Because one, everyone's aware that something's going to change and it's a macro or external factor, right?
Yeah, but from a we are talking, so
Yeah.
From an anomaly detection perspective, though, right? In data, point in time is what I'm talking about. You're saying, hey, there is something that happened external today, COVID. We're going to adjust something.
I'm assuming something's going to change.
That he's talking about. And those throw me into like the other parts of what types of anomalies they are, right? Because you can have contextual anomalies, right? Is this something that normally in business like sets itself apart, right? Like all of a sudden we're tracking swimwear sales. And for some reason, all of a sudden, we see an increase in swimwear sales in December. Like, what the hell? Like, why? Why would that be happening in anomalies in data? You know, that may not just be single point. Maybe it's like a few days in a row or something like that. And then the other part of that conversation, I guess, is it a collective anomaly where there's groups of data points that exhibit different behaviors than we're used to? And to me, that's almost like what you'd be talking about with like COVID, like impacts to business, and retrospectively, we're seeing that there's a lift, you know, in sales or a huge dip, and we need to show in our data sets that the impact to the business was due to COVID or was due to, you know, some other outlying effect. And I think that's what he's driving into here. Is one of these anomalous types of effects, and how do we work with the business or convey that in the reporting? And that's not like single point thing like, hey, COVID, there's ramifications to all the data within there.
And I see what you're going with this, Tommy. I think you're trying to classify certain kinds of anomalies, and you know, maybe they impact the business differently. But I think at the end of the day, it's something that is not expected. And I feel like when the anomalies occur, there's a flurry of additional need for self-service, discovery work, right? So you have your normal reporting. Things are just clipping along. Production goes down. Data stops flowing. Something happens, right? And then I think the question really turns into, why did that happen? I want to dig deeper into the information to figure out what is causing this. And I think people try to start planning solutions to like, How do we fix this? Is this something that is fixable? Can we do something else? So, it's to me, I'm thinking like that. I don't think for me, I would quantify the kind of anomaly. I would just say that they happen. And then kind of my reaction to this is like, what is the right way to deal with it? And because I do know, like, so collecting some data in my engineering days, right? There is normal statistics that kind of take out some of the noise in the data. And one thing that I felt like I was doing a lot was with leadership, or when we're reporting out to leadership, things can bounce around. Anomalies can happen in your data, but is it worth noting? Is it worth alerting people to take action on that? So like, is this bad enough that we need to, is this a one-time deal? Like, okay, great. We had a dip in sales but is that something that's going to necessitate action to take place because we won't meet our budget or our goals? And I think when that occurs, there's a lot of time, and to your point, Tommy, right? COVID's occurring, it's a large event, it's affecting lots of people. Many businesses have to pivot and figure out a different way of doing things potentially. So everyone's trying to like, okay, we all need to self-service on data very quickly now, because everyone's got to figure out what's going on and how do we, you know, work out a strategy to address this and figure out the anomaly. So let me just say that from a classification of anomalies, one thing that just kind of comes to mind here, that this may not fit the topic or may not fit the topic. But one thing I find that's interesting, and it feels like it corresponds closely, is when you're looking at the capacity metrics app in Power BI, and there is smoothing turned on. So that reporting is trying to smooth the capacity usage for your environment. So again, one thing I'm thinking through here from like a real, you know, a fabric kind of example is when you have those occurrences of your heavy usage on a notebook or something inside Fabric, you get those spikes, but you don't actually see the spike in usage. You see it smoothed out over time. And so you can identify when smoothing is occurring. But if you're trying to address the behavior in Fabric of the spiked event, you kind of need to know what it is, and you kind of need to know when it occurred, so you can kind of go back and debug and say, oh, this event occurred at this time with really high usage. So yes, it's fine to show smoothing in the capacity metrics app, but you also kind of need to see it without the smoothing, so you can go back and retroactively say, oh, wow, that pipeline was very abusive to the system. We probably shouldn't put it at that time because everything else was running at the same time, or whatever the thing was, right? You kind of need to actually know what's occurring so you can kind of back into the way and back into the solution. Anyways, that's just my thought about a place where I could have put some anomaly thoughts around something that I'm very familiar with.
Yeah. I'm very interested in really the first part of David's question here, because we could obviously dive into from the analyst role, documenting and identifying certain spikes in data that either were going to be known or expected. But this is very a different way of looking at it, where it's how best to actually document those changes or those significant events. Again, whether like we're merging with an organization, so we're going to expect something to change, or we identified something that occurred that we were previously unaware of. So, and I'm looking like, what kind of documentation do we do? Feel like almost like a change log of, hey, we've had these significant events that have occurred. These are either the reasons why. So users are aware. If you see this is really focused, I would imagine, on like a sales rep looking at their quota, if something changed, well, what, like, hey, the numbers changed, right? Or something, why the significant event. How do we actually then, from a, I think, a data culture point of view, communicate that and make that part of the organization, not just identify it and smooth it out?
Well, I think you're making a good point here, Tommy. And I think where my mind is going, I think where I'm part of this topic is, and to your point, the earlier part of the question, right? What do we do to communicate what's occurring? How are we getting consensus around what occurred, right? So some things like a production failure inside the system, clear, right? Something failed, machine fell over, data's not flowing, a refresh didn't work, right? That's a very clear kind of expectation. I think those kind of anomalies, when we see data dip because of those things, you may have lost some things because the system fell apart, right? So, you know, you can communicate what the issue was. You can clearly communicate, okay, we're going to take actions and try and fix this. We're going to build more resilience. We're going to go fix the code, whatever the thing is, right? There's some kind of action that usually spits out of those things. But other things where you don't know what happened, you know, you're working with a customer and the sales dip unexpectedly. What changed? Did something in the market, you know, did some other company run a sale and you weren't? Did you not catch that, right? That could have caused your client's data to dip and sales to go down, but someone else's sales went up. You know, do you even have visibility to see what was going on there? So like again, this is where I feel like, you know, there's potentially a lot of retroactive discovery work, self-service, I would say, that needs to occur in order to come up with a reason to why that data did what it did. And so I think that maybe the question here is, what do you do when you find it, and how do you communicate that back to people in the reports? I think that's a bigger question. I don't really know if I know the answer on how I would approach that, other than the fact, so let me say it this way. I've seen other companies do anomaly detection. So let me give you another example that I've encountered. Google Analytics. Google all the time. It's streaming data. It's 24/7. It's always on. Now, I don't care about real-time data, but I do care about aggregated historical data. Often, I'll see inside the charts that Google has produced, there's a note. Hey, on this day, something went down, or something was incorrectly counted, or whatever this point was. And so they actually put marks or vertical lines on the chart and note something that's occurring on that time. Can you do that in Power BI? Maybe. It's a lot more work to add that to your data and your charts. So would I spend a lot of time in my standard charts to build a whole bunch of additional features in them to be able to capture? I mean, if you have a lot of anomalies, maybe it makes sense to spend the time to do that. But maybe it's just something as simple as in the information button, you add a little note there around anomaly data detected on this day, da 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 da. Or maybe you put a little card on the page with maybe a tooltip that describes, hey, we found some anomalous data. We we put that here inside the report. So you want to kind of make it easy for people to see what was occurring. I'm going to go on a limb here and say maybe you supply a link to a blog post or a, you know, a page in your COP that describes, hey, here's a little note, click this link, takes you somewhere else, and then you can describe the, you know, what occurred, what happened, how to document more of those things. I mean, I do think you don't ignore it. I don't think you do that.
I think you bring up a good point, Mike, around that raises the question of like, what is the occurrence of something like this?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just this one-off decision point? Then to me, that could be as easy as communication with the business and saying, hey, you're seeing this anomaly in the report because of this.
It might be just an email.
And that could be it could be completely outside the realm of the report.
Correct. Right?
Because it's not like you're going to make this decision all on your own or just, hey, we're going to make a decision and then communicate that in the report.
Correct.
There should be a dialogue. Like, do we want this in there? And if the answer is yes, like, I would almost argue that goes in a page you should kind of have anyway that describes, you know, what the intent of the report is, the business logic applied, and agreed. Right in there could be, you know,
release notes.
Hey, in early 23, you know, we remove or smoothed out the data because we completely changed our segmentation model as an organization.
True.
And whatever. And everybody knows like that if they're retrospectively, because that was part of his question, he didn't modify any of the historical data.
Right. Yeah.
Retrospectively, then there's going to be a shift. So if you're looking at 24 on, not a big deal. Everybody's on the same path. All this, everything looks right. But if they're doing, you know, year over year, like back year, like I'm going to look at the last 6 months of 23.
Sales are up.
Sales are down. Why all of a sudden is there this big spike or this major dip? And that would then you'd have that already in the report. And you're communicating that those types of changes are also part of the report documentation. So I really if it's not that though, right? If it's not off and we have to start developing, I guess I lead into your other part of what you were talking about, which is what is the view or what is the intent of the report? Is it that very short-term detail I need to see every tick, or is it more smooth because the report output requires decisions based on long-term, analysis, and we're looking month over month or whatever, and all of a sudden that spike or dip causes an anomalous effect when we're looking at a month. That is a point at which I think decisions have to be made around what you want to do with the data. What I have seen in terms of effect is if this is a consistent, we're dealing with anomalies all the time, I've seen solutions where there are processes in place for business to identify those spikes and have them removed from the models, have them removed out and saying, yep, I understand what that spike is. I choose that's not going to affect or not be part of the data coming through in this report. And thereby business owns that anomaly, right? Because those are happening consistently and they know the reasons because there's a subject matter experts, but they're also, that also requires systems that allow them to not only see the raw data, right? See the data that's going in the model, but also impact and retrospectively have an opportunity to remove that out of stuff that they're making decisions on in the report itself.
I think it's important to identify here, Mike, when you brought about the Google Analytics, and I'm thinking about their insights or in Power BI.
Yep.
Hey, we found an interesting trend.
Sure.
I think that's very different from, let's say we're dealing with a certified semantic model, or in this case, we're looking into things from the organization point of view and not from the analyst point of view on an outlier where we notice an event. I think it's important where this goes into a business conversation and data governance, because you're probably going to have to identify some thresholds, right, around some of your main metrics, not just an interesting trend occurred. Hey, if sales goes spikes 10%, then that's something that we're going to put in our documentation or look into. What are the thresholds both for an increase or a decrease, either over time or on a single day? especially for your semantic models, kind of something that we're in a sense tracking in case rather than an interesting trend. Because from a layperson's point of view, it's like, okay, I can look into my automated insights, but that's what we'll call a little more interesting, not necessarily, hey, we merged with the company or we had to change our systems. We made that note of it. Where I'm going with, yeah, I'll stop there because I have another thought.
I think you have another, I want to just interject here on this first thought. And then I think there's probably more thoughts you're going to come along.
I'm on a roll, but yeah, keep going. Yeah,
you're on a roll. I like what you're saying there. And I think you mentioned like data governance. And what comes to mind here is, and this is where I think planning and proper data governance in your organization does really matter in this situation. Because if data is coming out, and Seth, your example earlier, something went down, we have a stream of data coming into our system, we stop collecting data for a period of time. Someone needs to own that, right? And so I think being able to understand the pipeline of how the data gets into your system and where different roles on different teams are responsible. And what I have found, some teams don't want to be responsible for data that they should be in charge of. Without clear leadership expectations of these are the boundaries of what team owns what data, you should push on that team a little bit to either do the analysis, to fix it. I mean, the other thing in the comment here was, do you normalize the data? Like typically the numbers would look like this. We'll have two lenses of the data now, one where it's normalized and one where it's not normalized, right? So in the example of we're changing the categories over, the question would be is, in my opinion, who's the owner of the categories of that data? Was there approval made to get that to happen? To me, that sounds like a large effort. That is a big change occurring that will impact the data. Someone made a conscious decision to say 2023 and older, we're not going to change the categories. 2024 and newer, we're going to change the categories. So in that decision point, there should have been another conversation around, well, I'm sure there was, this will impact our data. You don't just do the change and all of a sudden be like, oh, it's going to influence all our reports. You kind of know it's coming. So in that situation, I think there's actually a change order management exercise that's coming along with this. Someone saying, we're going to change the categories. We're going to own this responsibility. FYI, this is coming out. And whether it's a training webinar, a little short video you record to the team, maybe you make a blog post about it, you communicate it. But somehow the owner of the change of that category should be communicating to the organization, this is coming. So my feeling here is, yes, this is a governance, but this is purely a data culture part of this. And does your company have, it doesn't have to have it right now, but like when you do something like this, when you learn from this and what works in your company culture, maybe you need to make a policy around what that looks like in the future. Spend an extra, a little bit of time thinking about what we changed, how we communicated it, and did it go well? And then maybe there's a policy around that. Maybe you have to ask for more stakeholders to figure out what that's looking like. Or maybe this was a top-down decision that was just made. Great, no problem. Communicate it. Like you can't just do these things in a vacuum and have them occurring. Right. One other thought before I jump off that topic and let you go back, Tommy, to your other question. I think the other moment in my mind here is when you talked about smoothing out the data or going back and kind of restating the data. I don't know how hard this is. This is going to be like there's a naivete, I guess, about what I'm going to say here, but I feel like it'd be nice to be able to see the data unaltered and altered. And if you're altering the data, being very clear about what section of data was being altered would be helpful. Again, I realize that potentially could cause a lot of extra report rebuilds. There's a lot of, things. So to our other points earlier around, this change is coming. This is going to change the data. We're going to see things that are different. How are we going to handle the impact downstream of what that's going to do? And then what teams, like for example, if we're making the category change, that's maybe a product management team decision. Great. They can decide whatever they want to do to align it to their business objectives. Great. Hopefully something's coming down from the top that says this is why we're doing this. And then every team that's downstream of that data needs to compensate and adjust. Because if you change the data and you have other people building reports in a self-service way, their data will be different. They need to know what's going on. So anyways, that was just my other thoughts around those things.
There's a ton of good thoughts, but you and I on a roll, by the way, you segued perfectly into, I think, kind of the other part of this. Yes, obviously from the people point of view and the policy, you can't really get a lot done, I think, really without this, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking about this in terms of, I don't think it's sufficient just to have in the reference page for this situation and have a reference page in Power BI and say, this is where we have a change log, especially to the point, what I love and that I was going is the ownership and kind of like those major changes has to be accountable and has to be accessible again to everyone, not just this change, we're looking into it and you have to scroll.
Yeah,
I'm thinking, honestly, if you ever gone to the Microsoft Admin Center and you've gone to like the Message Center and it's like, here's all the major either things coming up, things we're looking into, things we've changed.
Yes.
And it's even something like if you have set up for a, and again, I'm assuming here we're looking at a certified semantic model.
Sure.
That's, we'll say, and we have those policies.
You can make a lot of assumptions about this.
Yes. We're not just talking about the random Google Analytics report here with all this effort that would need to be involved. You can't. You just can't. Nope. But
this is trusting data. This is trusting your data, though. Like this. Sure. This erodes things like this. If you do things like this, this erodes trust potentially in teams because you've modified the data away from what it really was, and they needed to see the real data potentially. Right.
But that's also, I think, what David is outlining. He doesn't want to. He's aware of that and doesn't want that to happen.
Agree.
Right. So I'm honestly envisioning, if you will, with me come on this journey of
following you on a journey of any kind is scary.
Good luck, but go ahead.
I'm on board.
In Confluence, hey, if you want to see updates to the semantic model or we'll call them major changes, click on this link. And there it has the status of any, we changed the systems. We looked into it. This was occurred. There's a major change with our categories. The marketing team's looking into it and having the statuses where someone could easily see we either changed some of the logic on this date. Here's the affected change, and or something happened, like I said, externally, where it's a major outlier. BI is looking into it, having that change log and actually stored somewhere too, because it's not just one to have the documentation or the log, but I think to the point is it also needs to be accessible for everybody. Right. So if I'm looking into something as a normal consumer, or I think especially even as a from a leadership point of view, it's like, man, you know, I'm looking at some of these numbers. I can easily go to this and say, oh, good. My team's looking into this, or this is why the categories are off. This is what potentially occurred. And I think, again, this is a lot of setup. I'm not saying this is easy, but I think you're dealing again. This is something that could be really cool for especially certified models and also that trust point of view.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about that. So
that wasn't too far of a walk. So
no, it wasn't. And I like the point there at the end. I continually go back to this whole area of, is it central importance or is it self-service important?
Right.
Because I do think there's different levels of, Let's call it what it is, right? There's a certain level of spend of dollars on people's time to do certain things, right? If we're saying things are certified, we want to retain trust. We want to have a process. We need to have people engaged, right? So to me, a lot of the breakpoint on what this looks like is this stuff certified? Have we made a decision that this is really important data that we know we need to have a lot of eyes on? I think the effort you spend to curate, educate about that data is different than a single team in a single department. I think you can be a little bit more loose about the requirements around how you document things. I think it works. I think the ability for you to scale a community of practice for either the central team for central data sets or a business unit team in their business unit, I think it scales really well, honestly. Like you can have one person in your team doing some data stuff and they're making little notes, and then instead of emailing everyone, you could do that. And that's a way of doing it. But I think it gets buried in emails and people lose track of things. I think I would rather put a post on a SharePoint page and document what happened and write a little article and then share an email. Hey, this changed. Here's some information. Click here, learn more about it. And then people can kind of interact with that information. But I think it's really relevant to have that kind of public, not public, integer your company, like that common thing that you're going to use. I think that just sets up really good practices. That's kind of how I started RBI Tips. I mean, that's kind of what we started with initially. I was trying to teach people how to use Power BI in very basic ways. And I thought, well, if I'm teaching people in my company how to like get some Excel files in, doing some transforms, building this visual a certain way, if I'm trying to figure it out, I guarantee you someone else is trying to figure it out too. And that's kind of why I started blogging and putting down posts and writing things, because look, I'm learning these things, everyone. Learn along with me. Here's some examples of this. And I think that really kind of grew with interest. And that's kind of how this stuff works. Because now I can write one article and I can hit thousands of people with that single article, as opposed to now I'm only doing like a one-to-one piece of communication. It scales what you're able to do.
One real quick thing on that. And then I know Seth is clamoring, but because my mind is popping with ideas right now of how this could actually be set up in an actual software. I think any of these changes, it's good to have the communication, but again, I think it's really important here is that the data or the information needs to be structured, searchable, what have you. Statuses, ownership, change, etc. That can be searchable. I could set this up in Confluence where, hey, here's all of our certified models. Look at this log. Status, you know, updates, the owner, and kind of the resolve, right? And then you can send the emails and communication out, because we're kind of shifting a little into change management, like an infrastructure, right? We're looking into what updates we made or what those statuses are. Hey, we're going to change from AWS to Azure in 2 months. If that's part of this log here or this kind of thing, we're expecting something to happen. So there's the statuses there, but it has to be, again, I think to me, accessible. So if I wanted to go back on a certain date or certain significant event, I can easily do that. And it's simple, especially if you have the right tooling. And I think you do need some tooling here.
What are your thoughts, Seth? Anything that sticks out to you?
That, gentleman, was a wild ride. A wild ride. I did not see coming. I think, and the reason I say that is not to be poking, but kind of poking, how we take a question about a report and end up in AWS versus Azure change management on a corporate level. It slow clap. Very, very good.
Yeah,
It shows just where our conversations can go. And I love them. I love them. I'm not saying like the points you guys are making aren't relevant. However, I didn't pick up any of the corporate culture change management COE like stuff from this question. I picked it up from just the report level. Now, do I want to kill that part of the conversation? No. Should we dial it back from change management AWS Azure? Yeah, I think so. I guess from my perspective, the one other point that kind of sticks out is, and some of the comments were being made in chat, is I don't know enough about like the report types of reports he's building, right? The segmentation, where a lot of the anomaly detection and or feedback I think I had related to how business people could impact those anomalies was mostly based in like forecasting, like where we're talking about different parts of the organization that are working in tandem together to analyze, reprocess a bunch of data against different types of models. And that's where like these kind of ideas where how do we handle these anomalies? How do we smooth them? How do we project really take impact in reporting, like in the visualizations, right? So another thing within here, and I don't know if the data construct that he has is applicable, because he doesn't retroactively, right? He's saying he's not retroactively going and change like modifying the historical path. So you may not be able to do this, but is there a point where you could show the different streams, right? Like, hey, we made a change, or there's an anomaly to the data that is affecting our business in this way, and this is now how we, you know, are segmenting out this data. If we hadn't done that, right, like we'll show you this other line, right? So you're seeing, like, in the forecasting room, you're comparing different models or different outputs. And I don't know if that's an option here in what he's asking specifically, but you could, like, show multiple tiers of data depending on what the business need is. If they want to see an impact of X thing, or if they don't want to see that, that could be a filter that they could pick and choose. So it's just another option, I guess, depending on the data sets that I've seen of as far as manipulating or still giving the business the opportunity to see the output that they would expect. Now, on the flip side, rather than saying like, hey, these are multiple different models you're comparing in a forecast, there's also potentially an opportunity to say, hey, I there are anomalies in our data set. And obviously, whether it's a documentation point in a report, if this is a single report, or if this is a link back to a Confluence page, because we're a solid COE and we're developing, this is just one report of many on this model, and that's where we want to standardize our documentation process. Same effect, right? The business understands where they can go look for the detail about what we're modifying in the data. And I think that's what's the most important thing. Now, does that mean, like, do you have a different set of filtering, right? Just in a toggle that says, yes, I want the data smoothed out. I don't want those anomalies, and my output reflects that. Or do I want the grain? I want the anomalies, because I'm going to go suss out and figure out, like, the differences in the outputs of the report. I think those are also a couple ideas that you could do. Probably a lot more data engineering on the back end, probably a bigger model, right? But potentially maybe not, right? If I can flag my data and say anomalous versus not, you know, that's a pretty easy toggle to just include, exclude.
I like that point there, Seth. What I wrote down in my comments here was the predictive side of data, I think, has much more implications to whether or not you smooth it out and fix it, I think, then right. Potentially some of the reporting aspects. So we're thinking about, like, just the report. I'm thinking about, like, the line chart, and I've got information on that single line chart. I think you don't want every year in the month of March that same spike to reoccur every year, because you know that's probably not very common on what the data would have normally looked like, right? So then you go back historically and say, okay, what has our data looked like historically during the month of March had this anomaly not happened? And potentially, to your point, Seth, like, if we're talking about, like, smoothing out the data and fixing it for that particular need, if our systems went down and potentially the data didn't stop occurring, we just couldn't see it. Yeah. So we have to kind of make some assumptions, like, we're going to just fix that and move on. We are going to normalize the data for that period of time or when things went down. So I think it really depends on what your use case is here. And now that we're talking fabric, I think you actually have to, you have the ability to consider, I also argue that not everyone's in fabric, so I get that. But what I mean is the fact that we now have fabric at our disposal, there is the possibility for business users to be doing data science-like things. And they're going to need to be able to clean room and make sure the data is good in order to produce better predictions. Part of better predictions is better data supporting the prediction. This is one of those things. This is the large activity that needs to occur of, like, how do we normalize the data for that period of time so that we get rid of some of that noise and can give us a better predictive model moving forward? And again, a prediction is an estimate, a guess. I don't need all the anomalies potentially in that. Maybe I do. It depends on what kind of prediction you're doing. If you're doing if you're doing failure prediction, you know, failure prediction on certain things, you're trying to predict when things will fail, yet you need the anomalies. That's what you're looking for. The edge cases that are producing the failure. But if you're trying to do forecasting, you're probably not doing that. So you have to have someone who kind of knows the data domain and what you're trying to do with the data, because that changes, I think, a little bit.
Yeah, it totally does. And I think the one thing we haven't talked about that's potentially the easiest solution, right, is does your data typically have anomalies, right? And if so, there are visualizations that you can include to your visual that will highlight what those anomalies would be, and just auto filter them out, right? Yep. Like, yep. I see those anomalies. That doesn't make any sense to my business. I'm going to just click off these and I no longer see them. Mm-hmm. Instead of kind of the obfuscated approach that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Either way, Adrian points out in the chat, I think one of the most important reasons why this is a relevant conversation and why it needs to be in some way, shape, or form clearly agreed and communicated, documented, whatever, with the business is this. Is the challenge, he says, the challenge is that in a few months, everybody forgot what caused the spike.
Yep.
Such information needed to be easily accessible and persisted over time. If I can stress one thing in experience, it is never, ever assume that no matter how big the problem was or big the impact to reporting mm-hmm. is, that even if business and you are aware of it, that you're going to retain that information in the future. Because mm-hmm. yes, to his point, a couple months later, someone's going to ask that question. You would have forgotten. Obviously, they have forgotten, or a new user didn't know. And there's no reference point. And guess who has to go track it down again? You, right? Like, you are the tracker of anomalies in the data. And that's why whatever solution you have related to, you know, in report, in visual, in documentation, in central documentation, mm-hmm. yes, put this down somewhere.
Yep.
Or, you know, put the smoothing or why you did something so that there's a central reference point for you and anyone else to go back to. Yep. Because that's how you remain like true to the original build of the report, what it was supposed to do in the first place, and yeah. or the data within it that is shifting or not shifting as time goes on.
I dig it. I love that point there as well. I think if anything, I'm pushing more towards document what you're doing, put it in a central location and communicate it out. I mean, there's definitely, again, you'll have to kind of incorporate what your business and data culture looks like. And I think being more transparent with those kind of things and not trying to hide stuff always seems to present itself with better trust towards the data and being transparent with those things, letting people react to it. Because you may change the data or you may have modified something in a way that the business didn't need it, or they want it back, or they need to see right. it different. Like, they're probably, that change potentially might facilitate additional conversations that will change how you're doing it. So having that documentation centrally, I think, is really important, and it helps a lot with building trust for your organization. All right, we're about at time here. Let's do final thoughts. So Seth, was that your final thought there on the
comment? Yeah, we'll Adrian? Just go. That was my final thought.
All right, Tommy, any final thoughts? You're going to now move to AWS.
It was an example. Major change to the system. Maybe you've seen it. I think the biggest thing for me really coming out of this conversation is you could go incredibly granular into the fine details with any abnormalities, but I'm going to, hey, if this is something that's important to the org or team, let's talk about setup first mm-hmm. rather than we're going to track any outlier. Where are our thresholds? Who are going to be the people involved or ownership? And I think, again, I think this is probably huge from a certified model point of view, but you have to have that, or then you just have a lot of data points and a lot more noise of outliers. So to me, it's like, let's get the focus on what are we tracking, and then who's going to own up to it. And then you have the setup. Then you actually have a pretty clear direction on being aware of anything that's going to or what has occurred.
I like that. I think I'll say on this one, I think my takeaway from this one is I think you should document what's going on. I wouldn't make changes without letting people know. I feel like depending on the scope and size of the team that's using this information, if you're in a department or if you're from central BI, you should really weigh where that information should be living. But regardless, a simple little blog post, if you're taking the effort to change the data or normalize it or, you know, whatever the decision of the business has been, I think it's important that you at least write it down, document it, put it in a public place. Boom. Just, you know, even if it's simple, a couple screenshots, problem statement, here's who owned the issue, and resolution. It's something simple like that. Just enough to get it down on paper. I think that'll really help. And I do think you have to weigh the balance of what are you going to use it for? You know, what's that decision point? If you're doing predictive things, yeah, you probably need to normalize it. If you're not, then, you know, there's other things you're trying to do with it, then maybe you don't. Maybe just make a note about it and move on. I will say that today, the Power BI tool doesn't give a great amount of support to making ad hoc comments on various data points inside a chart. You have commenting, you can do certain things about that, but there's not a super rich, like I can just make comments on a page and just tag them against something. So maybe that's a feature that we could eventually ask for in Power BI, but regardless, I think it's going to be, it depends on what is the importance of that data. Where does it come from? Anyways. Really good conversation today. Thank you very much for the question from the community. Really appreciate those things. You come up with amazing topics, and these are real problems. People really struggle with these kind of things. This is a real world example here. So with that, we thank you very much for lending us your ear for an hour, having us banter about some Power BI and data things. We appreciate your time. Our only ask is if you found some value from this one, if you really like this episode, please share it with somebody else. Let us know your thoughts. Have you done smoothing on data? Have you done some normalization? How did it work for you? Do you like the idea of having a central repo to document what changes on data sets? Let us know in the comments and share it out on social medias with your thoughts. Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Do you have a question, an idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about in a future episode like today? Well, head over to powerbi.tips/podcast. Leave your name, like David, and a great question. And probably try to leave it to one question for our sake. And finally, join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, and join us on all of powerbi.tips social media channels.
Awesome. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.